Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Health, Wealth, and Divine. My name is Juwanza. Thank you so much for tuning in today. It is Wednesday, and I'm very excited to have as my special guest a brother who's extremely busy, and I'm very, very fortunate to have him as my special guest today. It's been, we've been doing this series for a while now, and we've been very, very fortunate to have someone who can actually... bring information that has just been, I mean, captivating our listeners for months now. We've actually, this is our second series with my special guest. We've actually done a series on the 11 laws of God, which was awesome, awesome. People are still going back and listening to the archives of that show. And this show is no different. People are still going back and listening to the archives on this show. And this series has been on the Asante model. My special guest is Orwahehi Meturan Comet, by the way. And we've been doing a series on the Asante model and been looking at the Asante people and their society from the spiritual, economic, environmental, and social aspects. And tonight we're going to be discussing the administrative principles. So if you're tuning in for the first time, let me tell you a little bit about my guest today. Orwahehi Meturan Incomet has been a member of the Osiriset Society since 1975. He was appointed Orwa, which is Paramount King, by Shechem Meshechem, Ra'un Nefer Amen, and Chief Priest and King of the Osiriset Society. Now, as Orwa, he's responsible for guiding the lives of Osiriset's members and the Society's activities in Maryland, Virginia, and Washington, D.C. He's a member of the Society's Kerihev Priesthood and headed Osiriset's African Support Project. He holds a bachelor's degree in African American Studies and a master's degree in education, both from Howard University. I mentioned that he is Paramount King, and that is of the Washington, D.C. region of the Osiriset Society. And I just want to say thank you, Brother Orwa, for being my special guest again today. I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to come and share on this very, very interesting topic, the Asante model. Thank you so much for coming back today.
Okay, thank you for having us on.
It's truly an honor, my brother. It's truly an honor. Very, very grateful to have you. I know you're a very busy person. And as I mentioned to the listeners, and first I want to thank all of the new listeners that have tuned in. We've been getting a lot of new followers on Blog Talk, and I just want to say welcome, welcome, welcome. And as well to all of the people that have been with us since the onset of Health, Wealth, and Divine, I want to say thank you for your continued support. I certainly do appreciate you and do not take you for granted. But again, tonight, my special guest is Orwahehi Meturan Comet. We're going to be discussing the Asante model administrative principles. But again, as I mentioned, this is a series. And we have started off the series a few months ago and started off with, different aspects of the Asante model. Brother Orwa, if you don't mind, for those who are just tuning in, hearing this show for the first time, could you give a brief recap of what we've covered so far as far in terms of the series? Again, I mentioned that we touched upon the spiritual, economic, environmental, and social aspects. Could you just give our listeners a brief recap on what brings us to our topic today?
Okay, not a problem. As you know, the CSS Society was founded in 1973 by the Shechem Meshechem Ra'un Nefer Amen I, and the role and goal of the society was to provide a social vehicle through which those of us who live in the diaspora could not just learn about and read about and talk about the glory of our ancient African past, our African past, but could have a means through which we could apply those teachings to our daily lives. And as such, in looking at the African system of, of, organization, it was decision was made to follow the African kingship model, as opposed to electing presidents and chairmen, etc. We chose to follow the kingship model, so the establishment of kings and queen mothers, etc. And in 1982, we were introduced to one of the paramount kings of the Asante people in Ghana. And through that relationship, we ended up getting introduced to the king of the Asante people, the Asante Henio Tumfo Poguari II, who subsequently invited us to come to Ghana and participate with the Asante people in the 50th anniversary of the restoration of their kingship, their confederacy. Not the kingship, but the confederacy.
Okay.
So we went. As a result of that, our kingship was acknowledged by the Asante people, and our system of kingship was acknowledged there in Ghana in 85, and then subsequently also in Nigeria in, I think, 95 or 96 or something like that. So the kingship, as a part of that process, as I was evolved and promoted to king, I had made a decision that I wanted to do a thesis on something dealing with African kingship. It took me a while, some 30-some years, to a PhD thesis that was, some 30-some years to actually begin the process, which I just concluded this past summer, which mm-hmm. was the submission of the thesis entitled The Asante Divine Kingship of Asante as a Model for Sustainable Development of Self and Community.
Mm-hmm.
And the sustainable development, we were looking at several areas. We were looking at spiritually, socially, economically, politically. And the fifth question that we asked was whether or not the principles of the kingship itself does the kingship provide adequate training for the people who will become the leaders of the community,
mm-hmm.
and does it not the kingship, that system that is? And secondly, as a part of that, are there any of the principles and the practices of that training process that could be applied to people who are not Asante? Otherwise, say, could the leadership training and values and operating principles or administrative principles referred to them as be used by people in other parts of the world to improve the quality of leadership? As we look around the world today, we see that, well, let's not even look around the world, let's look here in the United States. But there's a great concern that many people have over the future of this country relative to the kinds of people that are being put forth as potential leaders of the government, in the government, some of whom are already a part of the government.
Mm-hmm.
And so as we look at some of the behaviors and statements and the moral and social activities of these people, the question begs to be answered, is this really, are we getting the best bang for our buck, and is there something that could be done differently to improve on what we're seeing as potential leaders within our country and other countries around the world? There's a lot of countries in Africa, the Middle East, and Europe, etc., where, you know, the leadership is not only questionable, but just downright corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And people have, you know, been taken advantage of, fortunes have been squandered, wealth been taken from people and put in Swiss bank accounts for a few people to benefit, while the masses of people suffer in poverty. So the question, this is all a part of the thinking of this research question that we were trying to look at in terms of, well, has the Asante system served its own interests, and is there anything in there that could be used outside of Asante in mm-hmm. other parts of the world?
Very, very, very interesting. I have a question, and that is just concerning the, you know, when the, just going back a bit to, you know, a comment that you made earlier, when the, I think it was back in, I think it was the 90s, 95, 96, I believe it was, when you stated that the Osiriset Society's kingship was acknowledged by the Asante. Was there ever any talk of, let's say, maybe even merging, or like, you know, how a family will adopt another family, you know, and was there any, ever any talk of there being like an Asante West, you know, where the Osiriset Society, since it was in fact deemed worthy for the kingship to be acknowledged, I mean, there had to be definite aspects that were, I mean, it had to be set up. I mean, it was. They acknowledged it. It's like, yes, this is it. You know, was there ever any consideration of maybe adopting the society, and, you know, maybe again, just, you know, how when people adopt another person, that other person takes that other person's name. You know, so was that ever a consideration?
No, because it really wasn't about us becoming identical, but becoming unified in,
okay,
in terms of principle. You know, unity is not everything being identical. Within a unified system, you have different functional parts or experiences, all of which are working toward a common goal. And our common goal, our goal is in conjunction with the Asante Nation, is the preservation and promotion of the African kingship.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can have a different model of expression but have the same goal and principles underlying the expression.
Mm-hmm. Well, my brother, before we actually delve into the administrative principles, I think it's necessary, just if just briefly, to just touch on the spiritual aspect. Again, for those who are just tuning in, we've been doing a series on the Asante model, and just for those who don't know, we talked about spirituality and how spirituality is the, I mean, governs everything, you know, in the Asante model. I mean, from the environment approach to the economic to the social, I mean, spirituality underlies each of those different categories. Could you talk about the importance of that aspect of the Asante model that we're going to be looking at?
Well, I mean, as you said, the everything is rooted in God. God is the architect of the universe, and as such, everything is a reflection of the divine expression in the world. And within the African context, it's not possible or conceivable to separate God from anything else. So when we talk about the principles of leadership, then we're looking at, well, what does that leadership look like as a reflection of God's activity in the world, or God's reflection in the world through the leader? And so that's really the goal, is to establish, to identify, well, what does God look like, and how does that reflect itself through the leadership of the individuals and society? So we have that foundational point, and so that the basis of the leadership principles then, or the administrative principles, have to do with morality and spirituality, and looking at, if we looked at the, and there's an alignment really between the Asante focus and the Kemetic focus, meaning that even though they don't have the 11 laws per se as in a canonized form as we do within the Kemetic system, they still have the same values, are looked upon as admirable qualities for a leader to have. A leader has to remain peaceful and calm in his deliberations, which will be reflected to the law of Amen. A leader has to be a unifier within the community. which should be reflective in the law of Osir. Your leader has to be express wisdom and always seek to provide a win-win within the to be a good judge in cases so that everyone feels that they were adequately serviced as a part of whatever the issue might be, which would be reflective in the law of Tuti. You know, they say a leader cannot be sitting around bemoaning their fate and, you know, down and depressed, et cetera, because of circumstances, which would be reflective through someone who is a master in the law of Seker. You know, that I have a challenging situation here, which is a part of the process of awakening the God within me. So I shouldn't be sad about it. I should embrace the opportunity to be successful through this challenge. You know, a leader has to be concerned about the interdependency of all aspects of the community, which would be kind of a more art perspective. So if we go down each of the 11 laws, we can find that, and when they talk about a good quality leader of the ministry principles, that they are reflected through, many of them are reflected through these 11 laws that our people of ancient Kemet put together or organized.
So any person whose personal, because if somebody's born and they're living, I assume I would take it for granted that we, you know, even though there are people that have reached the level of Osir and have been acknowledged as an Osir amongst their, you know, by their peers, as we see in the West, there are not many, if any, Osirs that are in positions of leadership in the political system, in the Democratic or the Republican party as such. Even when we look at, and, you know, I'm just going to bring up a brother's name, may he rest in peace. I'm not trying to cast aspersion upon him, but even when we think about Marion Barry, a very well-loved man by the citizens of Washington, D.C., known for, and one of the traits that he possessed and that people remember him for and loved him for, was the fact that he appeared to care for the elderly, appeared to, you know, one of the things that, I mean, that people always remember about him, if nothing else, you know, he got me a summer job, you know. And in light of the fact of the shortcomings that, you know, a lot of people have, and, you know, even in the face of the open and obvious issues, personal issues that he was dealing with at the time, people were willing to overlook that and reelect him, you know. And again, even upon his passing, you know, there was just an outpouring of love towards him. Now, based on the Asante model, then that, though, that type of reign, that political reign, would not have taken place with the obvious personal issues that person was dealing with, that would not and could not exist under the Asante regime. Is that correct?
Well, yes and no, in that the process within Asante and in most traditional African societies is that youth are trained to become spiritual, moral, ethical people. And their guidelines, their behaviors that are outlined through different initiation systems and trainings that youth go through to identify what does it mean to be a good citizen, what does it mean to be a quality citizen, what kinds of things can you not or should you not engage in as a part of your becoming an adult. So you have these trainings, and we'll just back up for a second. For example, in the Asante system historically, back in the old days, the youth obviously are being trained by the elders. So the elders put a process in place where the youth were trained how to become, how to function as adults in society. So they were put through this training program, and then they were given role play positions to play. And then they had to go through different scenarios as a part of those role play positions to show how they would adjust and adapt or deal with a particular situation. So they would be trained in the qualities a person should be upright in character, should be honest, should be a person that's just, looks at people justly, shouldn't be a thief or, you know, a robber or immoral in their behaviors, etc. And then they would assign different youth to a position. So one youth would play the family, the head of the family. Another youth would play the queen mother of the community. Another youth would play the king or chief of the community. Another youth would play the spokesperson. And then they would, then the elders would give them situations that they would have to respond to.
Mm-hmm.
And based on their response, then they would be, you know, evaluated by the elders to determine that they were potential candidates for future leadership. This is how leadership was developed. You know, because the leaders, the youth become tomorrow's leaders. But if you don't teach them what good leadership looks like, how do you expect them to become good leaders? And that's the problem that we have today in the West, and that people, you gave the example of Marion Barry, a good brother, but he didn't have the benefit of the village or the social system to guide a person in terms of how and what you should do. So he had some innate practice he learned through his experiences, but within the African model, if a person is given a position of authority, there are also checks and balances to ensure that that person follows or maintains that those qualities, those characteristics. You know, if a person becomes, as it's called, womanizing or stealing or taking advantage of people or looking at things selfishly, then there's a process for removing that person from office, from that position. And that becomes the most important point, that within the West, you can do anything. And based on your popularity, quote-unquote, it doesn't matter. The moral compass of the West has really been pointed, I don't know what the bad direction is, but it's off, it's really off. So that there's no guidelines, there's no protocols, there's no standard that people have to live up to in order to maintain their positions. I mean, the Wall Street debacle of a few years back, these cats stole millions of dollars, and they're still there,
mm-hmm.
taking more money. So these are the kinds of challenges that we were looking at in terms of, well, what does good leadership look like? What's the foundation of it? And what could we possibly do to improve the quality of leadership that we're experiencing in these Western political systems? Because it's the system itself that is not providing the training for the people. So people become leaders in the West through popularity or money or, you know, notoriety or whatever, but it doesn't mean that they are going to be a quote-unquote a good leader just because they're well-known.
You know, what's interesting, Orwa, is that, you know, just back to the, you know, to Marion Barry, again, and others, not just Marion Barry, but others who have, you know, found themselves elected, and, you know, I mean, there are people that have left office in shame because of scandals and, you know, so forth. But what's interesting to me is that the fact that in, for example, in this case, you know, the people, in spite of that, wanted to, you know, and did reelect him, you know, his popularity may have actually increased, you know, speaks a lot to the condition not just of the leader, but the people that are being led, you know, because the leader can't elect itself. You know, the leader had to have the support, the love, the vote, you know, of the people who, you know, put him in there, you know. So, and again, and this is not against Marion Barry, you know what I mean? I actually met the brother and liked the brother. But it speaks a lot to the people that are being led and the pool out of which, you know, a person can arise and be popular and have these traits that are, you know, just overlooked. Now, a lot of people have traits. You know, a lot of people have stuff. We all got stuff we got to work on. You know, so I'm not, you know, sitting up here throwing stones, you know, because, again, I did mention that there were other people who have left office and scandals and so forth, you know. So, but what do you say about that as far as the condition, the spiritual condition of the people that actually, it speaks a lot to the people's condition that they would reelect a leader that in that particular frame of mind?
Well, it's not so much re-elect. It's again, the solution, the problem is the culture, as you said. There's no, the foundation of there's no system for identifying what does good leadership look like in the West. There's no guideline. There's no behavior standards that have to be adhered to. You know, Western culture is just kind of like whatever you want to do, you can do it as long as no one else, quote unquote, is hurt by it, as opposed to having some standards of morality or ethics that each person and the culture itself aspires to. You know, so the problem is if you know, culture is like the pond, like the lake, you know, and everyone goes to the lake to get their water. So if the water is toxic, then that means everyone who's drinking that water is going to be toxic.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's the culture that's the problem itself. It's the lack of spiritual foundation in the culture. It's a lack of a model. It's a lack of true self-identity. Which is, you know, we go back to the ancient comedic statement, know thyself. You know, people don't understand who and what we are because we're accepted as animals or human beings, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as we look at ourselves as that, then we will accept all of the behaviors that are part of that portfolio, part of that picture. But once we accept that my true goal, my true purpose of being here is to become a divine being, then we have to raise our standard. We have to up our game. And then we can identify, well, what does a divine being look like? And we go back to the 11 laws, meaning that if I'm not living up to this law or that law, then I know that that's something I have to work on overcoming. I have to work on cultivating, as opposed to just sit right in the office while I'm only human.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's what we're really looking at. We're looking at a culture that does not have a spiritual foundation, a proper spiritual foundation around which people can build and organize their lives.
So when a leader is chosen by the people in the Asante model, then it, as you mentioned they might not have the 11 laws per se as a foundation, but some similar values, then the divinity of the clan or the group is already acknowledged and understood, that the purpose of not just the leader itself, but the group that he's leading, or the culture, the society that is being led, that each and every person within that society, that is their goal as well. And so would you say then that the leader's job then is to create or cultivate a society wherein the individuals in that society can aspire to reach their divinity, with that being the main goal? I mean, that is the ultimate final goal, for everyone to reach their divinity. And the leader's role is in that, is to create and cultivate, sustain through the political system, making sure that the community has everything that it needs so that the individuals within that community can reach their divinity?
Well, that would be the ideal.
And
we found evidences historically of that being a part of the Asante model, the Asante system. However, with the acceptance of foreign religion as Christianity, principally among the Asante, even though some are Muslim, it changes the paradigm, because they no longer now are seeking to become one with God. You have to accept that you're a sinner by nature, that you're constantly going to be less than the divine being, and as such, then you have where the majority of people, the people who are no longer, where the emphasis is no longer on, well, this is good, we talked about this before. There was a process called the soul washing that everyone used to do.
Mm-hmm.
And another process called Nyamisu, which was like a daily meditation where a person would engage in reflecting on becoming one with God, expressing the character of God. These were practices that were common within the community, within amongst the people, years ago. However, now these practices are pretty much gone. The king still has to go through the soul washing, et cetera, but the majority of people don't do it. Hence, because they've accepted a model, a different model of what it means to be a person, a spiritual person. So the Western model, the Christian model, gives you a different goal. You're supposed to believe in something as opposed to become a reflection of something, become something.
So what would you say, Brother Owa, is the cause then, because when we talk about leadership, even in the home, I know we're talking about it from a political standpoint and the qualities and what makes up a good leader and how, that works. But even in the home, even if you look at the West now and you look at a lot of, and I'm sure it's not just the West, I'm sure it's all over the world, but there is an obvious lack of respect by younger people towards older people, even their own parents. Children seem unruly. A lot of times parents can't seem to do anything with them. And not only are children disrespectful and unruly to their own parents, but then that behavior spreads, and even just in, with elders at large, there just tends to be this serious lack of respect. And it appears that there's a real, real serious problem when it comes to older people even trying to step to young people to correct them, I mean, they might be taking their own life in their own hands, you know, just by trying to correct someone, you know. So what, I mean, this is a rhetorical question, but what would you suggest is the root of that, and how do we fix that so that we create better leaders in the home, in the community, and then ultimately we can actually select and elect, you know, people that will lead us and guide us politically that, you know, serve the community in a better fashion than the way it's being served now?
Well, I mean, the root of that is the same root problem that we're discussing generically. You know, if the culture does not nourish the divine within, if the goal each person's focus is not to become a divine being, then, you know, you have what we have, where most people don't know why they're on earth. Most people don't even accept that there is a purpose for being on earth, that there's a purpose for the earth. And as such, if you don't know where you're going, as they say, any road will take you someplace.
Mm-hmm.
And so the problem is people are just running down roads without any destination in mind. So we have to reestablish the goal. We have to reestablish the destination. We have to be able to point people in the right direction and show them, not just tell them which way to go, but show them through our experiences, through our behavior, that this is the proper way to go. It's the only way to turn this thing around.
Mm-hmm.
As we talked about earlier, if the lake is polluted and everybody's drinking from the lake, everyone's polluted, and the lake is definitely polluted.
Mm-hmm.
So once we understand that it's the problem that if people are doing what's that thing as a pandemic, an academic kind of situation,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, the environment is polluted, so everyone in the environment is becoming ill because the environment itself is polluted. Well, the Western culture is a toxic environment, and everyone is being nourished by this culture, and hence behaving in these toxic ways.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way to clean it up is to begin to clean up the people individually, each person, as we begin to clean ourselves, detoxify ourselves, then we have to become the models for the detoxification process. We have to be there to show people this is the proper way to go. This is the course that we need to follow. This is the error of our ways, if you will. And by doing that, we can begin to turn it around. But, you know, you can't do it. There's no other way. There's no the problem with most of the elders who are trying to direct the youth is that they had the same kind of toxic upbringing that the youth are having. It's just that. So where can the blind lead the blind, so to speak?
Yeah. Or well, we've got a question. Somebody wants to talk to you. I'm going to call out the last four digits of your number. Okay. 4356, you're on the air with Orwahehi Metoran Comet. Welcome to Health, Wealth, and Divine.
Thank you very much. Just a question. If I, as in the Asante model, as a leader, and I've achieved all the things that I need to, I've recognized and I know the divinity, and I've met all the standards, whatever, you know, those are, what happens and where is the redemption should I fall once I've gotten to that level within that model? Or are you saying that once you recognize your divinity and you get to that level, you won't fall or you won't have any human frailties?
Yeah, well, it's two different parts of that. One is the goal, and the other part is the journey toward the goal. Now, within the context of a journey, if I'm trying to get to something, I'm going to have some missteps along the way, probably. The problem is not that I misstep. The problem is if I don't try to get back on course, and that's what we have to be mindful of, that you know that the path to divinity is met with has to be met with sincerity and conviction and devotion.
Right.
And as such, if I do so, then I may err, but I'm not going to become an errant. I'm going to correct my error and get back on the horse, so to speak. And as long as a person is doing that, then there is no blame. And the way that we know a person is doing that is we go to God. We have divination systems, because you never know what's going on within another person. But God sees all. God knows all. And as if we can identify him and show him that this person made a mistake, but they're not on that path. They just fell down, so to speak. Then we have to give everyone. We all have to be given the opportunity to go through the growth process.
Okay. I thought about that when Juwanza was using Marion Barry as an example, and I thought about a great man, actually, and very learned man and sincere man, and it seemed like what he was doing to himself, but he was still serving the public well. And I'm wondering, you know, if even in his abuse of himself, would he not have been able to be redeemed and help be, you know, redirected back to his divinity?
Sure.
Okay. Because it almost seems like I'm hearing you say that once you got to a certain level, you're at this level of perfection, if that is a word to be used in this regard, and that's it, you're there. But I think we can be perfect at times in certain situations, but I just see it as being something very difficult to maintain. And I was wondering where the redemption and the redemptive value and quality is, you know, as to getting me back to where I need to stay constantly.
Well,
yeah, I mean,
Queen Renee, let me jump in for a second now. For example, in the case of Brother Marion, you know, the redemption, I guess, for me, from my perspective, is that he can be redeemed, but the proof that we have redeemed him or are willing and open to offering, you know, forgiveness, for lack of a better term, or, you know,
uh-huh.
not necessarily that, you know, we allow this individual who's clearly sick, okay, to stay
right
in office. Is like, you know, okay, there's some other things going on personally that need to be taken care of, because we, you know, we really care more about his soul than, you know, his office. Because of course we would rather him get himself together and live a long time healthy than to, you know, just stay in office and continue.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So
right.
You know,
I agree
would think
with that.
That the proof of redemption, or us being a redemptive, or a people that are open to embrace, you know, people once they've fallen, is not necessarily that we allow them to stay in office when they clearly have other things that are going on that,
other
you
issues.
Know. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, I just wanted to say that, and, you know, because I think that sometimes we feel or tend to act like if you have forgiven me, for lack of a better term, or if you, you know, are offering redemption, then let me stay. Let me keep on doing what I'm doing. You know, where there are other things maybe you need to step down for a moment and get some things together. And you know, once you get some things together, because there's clearly some things that are going on that could actually kill you. You know what I
That's
mean?
That's right.
You up out of here. You could OD.
Right.
I mean, you could do. You know, we need to make sure that you're okay before we. You know, and we need to watch you. You know what I mean? For a
exactly.
while. Now, that doesn't mean that we're perfect either. But
mm-hmm.
you know, so I just wanted to throw that out there too, because I think
right.
that I didn't want to make it seem like I was casting any aspersion. I mean, we've all got stuff that.
Oh,
we
Oh no
need
no
to
no
work
no
on.
No! I know you weren't. I know you weren't. But I just wondered about that, because it almost seemed like, you know, once you get there, you're there. But I think it's something that we all ascribe to do, is to keep going on that road to perfection. And that in traveling, you know, you're going to have some frailties. You're going to have some missteps, like he said. So, but we can be redirected to that divinity, or back to that divinity.
Well, brother,
yeah,
or what?
We always have the oracle,
okay.
the means of consulting to find out who hasn't made mistakes. Well,
right.
So the question becomes, really, have I not made a mistake, but am I working on correcting the problem? You know, it's a process that we each have to go through, but within this
right.
the Kemetic system, we have protocols and processes that are there to help us, to guide us through the process to correct whatever the errors are. And so
Understood.
That was a part of declarations of freedom of sin that we talked about in the Kemetic system, and a part of the Nyamisu process that we talked about within the Asante system. The problem
Understood.
Is in the Western culture, there's no understanding or appreciation of the goal to become a perfect being or become a god
uh-huh.
a man or a god woman, because they accept that, you know, you're a sinner by nature.
Right.
And
understand.
So if I accept that you're going to sin, then, you know, why am I trying to help you to become sin free? If your nature is a sinful one.
Understood. Yeah, because I always feel like, especially when your mind is renewed, your heart, mind, body, and soul, all that stuff is transformed. And unless you walk into that transformation, there's always going to be this gravitational pull back to something less than. So it is an active thing to do. And that's what I was wondering. If it just almost seemed as if I was understanding you to say you get to that place of divinity and you've arrived. And I just couldn't wrap my mind around that one. Not that I say we can't stay there, but I just felt like it's hard.
Well, look at this.
Once you get there,
for example, let's just use an example of diet. You know, back in
mm-hmm.
1975, right, I became a vegan. So actually, in 1970, I guess 70s, I began to look at my diet. So I began a process of, you know, trying to clean it up, getting rid of meat and pork and eventually fish and then eventually eggs and eventually milk products. So I became a vegan in 1975. Now, during the course of that process, there may have been times when, you know, I was less convicted to a position or another. I was moving towards something. But since that time, though, that's not an issue. So you can achieve a level of quote unquote perfection, if you will. And once you do that, you're not going to go back. I mean, I used to smoke, but once I overcame that habit, I don't go back and smoke. So yeah, we have these processes, these things within our character that we need to perfect per se. And we work on them, you know, 1, 2, 4, 5 at a time, whatever the case may be. But as we perfect that aspect of our being, there's no reason to go back and to go backwards. You're not going to go backwards. So perfection is not attainable. It's just that it's a process. But once we reach certain levels, certain plateaus, you know, we begin to go further. We don't go backwards, you know, to other places where you already overcame.
Well, you know, one thing that people might say is that, again, you know, and again, it's a process of transformation. And I think now might be a good time to talk about even the role that initiation plays in this whole transformation process. Because, again, people will say, you know, well, I'm only human. You know, I slipped, you know, yeah, I tried to, you know, do the vegan thing and, you know, I'm only human, you know, I got a hamburger, you know what I mean? It's like, hey, I'm human, you know, so if with that identification, you know, that of being a human and without the initiation, because it actually does take spiritual work to make, I mean, a daily spiritual work to actually make that transformation. Matter of fact, I love the word transformation in it. It's got the word trance, you know. So if you could, Brother Orwa, could you talk about even the role of initiation as it relates to this discussion? We're talking about leadership and even how with that can help once you have made that declaration that, you know, I want to be divine. I know it's more than me just saying I'm divine and acknowledging the fact that, you know, I'm divine, but I need to actually do something to make that real. Could you talk about the role of initiation?
Well, the initiation process basically is the process through which we identify the things within our being where we need to change. And we go through the transformational process to make that change. Like we say, I am this. I state I'm this, but I have to become devoted to that. And the devotion is my commitment to it. And but most often, if it's something I don't do already, then I don't have the spiritual behavior cultivated to carry it out. So initiation is the process through which I cultivate the behavior that I know I need to manifest through the meditation work, etc., which then gives me the spiritual. It's like programming my spirit to become what I want it to become. This is, if you look at a computer is just a machine there. But the programmer gives it instructions to transform its behavior into what it wants to become. So if my spirit is cultivated already toward eating something that's not good for me, well, there's a spiritual energy there that moves me. There's a passion, there's a desire, there's a whatever, a craving that is pushing me, pulling me, dragging me toward consuming this product. Well, the only way I'm going to overcome that is by reconditioning my spirit, re-channeling my energy, transforming the view of the goal and the energy that I'm manifesting away from that toward where I want it to go. So initiation helps us then by identifying the changes that we need to make, and then gives us the processes, protocols, practices to initiate those changes spiritually, so that as we grow and develop and become confronted with those situations in life, we're able to make that transformation, make that change as a part of our, become a part of our being, as opposed to just an ideal within our mind, our spirit.
You know, the law of Ma'at states that God needs me to come into the world and fulfilling God's need is the highest act of love. So when we keep in mind then that particular law of the 11, just, and there are, of course, the 10 others, but just the fact that God needs me to come into the world, you know, and I think that for people to grasp that, that like you've mentioned as you've gone over the 11 laws and shared with us that in order for God to, you know, be omniscient, you know, he had to be, he had to create things. In order for God to be omnipresent, he had to create places. In order for God to be, you know, all-powerful, you know, all of those, you know, when we keep in mind the 11 laws, then it's easier, I think, to, once we really grasp, you know, this purpose of life and the purpose of God creating the earth and, you know, our role in that, you know, and if giving God a vehicle through which God can come into and express the world is the highest act of love, and we say that we love God, you know, then I guess we prove that by at least endeavoring to become divine. And I think it's very, very important that we surround ourselves with other people, at least associating with a community of people that are endeavoring also to become divine by aspiring to live the 11 laws of God. Would you talk about, Brother Orwell, this, the need to even fellowship? Because, again, when, what does God look like? I mean, if you're around a group of people and associating with a group of people that are endeavoring to become God-like and present their persons as vehicles through which God can come through and express itself in the world, then that association can breed, you know, just the will to really know that, hey, I can do this. I'm with other people that are striving to do the exact same thing. Could you talk about the need to associate with people who are on the same spiritual path, that if divinity is your goal, then it certainly helps to be around other people that are striving towards that same goal?
Well, the critical piece that we have to accept is that we have to change our paradigm. Again, we've been raised in this Western world, and the idea that's constantly been put forth is that man is an individual, a rugged individual, pick yourself up by your bootstraps, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of which is a means of keeping people separated and powerless, keeping people separated and controllable. Man is a social being. We're a corporate being, meaning we're dependent on one another. That law of Ma'at that you spoke about is the understanding that everything is interdependent and interrelated on everything else. And until we accept that as the foundation of our experience, even though whether we accept it or not, it's the reality. No one can function in this world as an individual, as an island. All of us are dependent on the cooperative, corporate expressions and experiences and contributions of other people. You know, you can't go out here and drive your car someplace. And where do you get the car from?
Mm-hmm.
Where's the road come from? Where's the fuel come from?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're all interdependent and interrelated. And the problem with that we experience here as a people is that we have we've been given an opportunity to channel our divinity. People will say, and this is a whole other discussion we don't have time to go into, but back in at the turn of the century, around 2000, I did some research looking at where we were as a people compared with where we were in 1960. And I basically just used some the census data from the period, looking at, you know, our mean income as African people, African Americans in this country, compared then and that. And in all these markers, it showed that we were worse off in 2000 than we were in 1960. Well, in 1960, we didn't have all these political leaders. We didn't have policemen and mayors and, you know, presidents and, you know, all the positions that we as all these people educated with high school, college education, et cetera. We didn't have any of that. So we have a lot more of that. All of what was is the result of, quote, unquote, being integrated in society, we're achieving on those levels. But it's not translating into a collective growth and benefit in terms of our standing as families in the society. Well, now some people might say, well, we were better off when we were segregated because at least we had our own businesses, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which is true. However, the real deal is it were we better off then because we chose to shop with one another, or we were just forced to shop with one another?
Good point.
And when we were given the opportunity not to have to shop with one another, then where what happened? So the question is, we have a free will. And this leads back to our conversation in terms of our becoming a divine being. It's one thing if you force me to do something and I do it well, that doesn't mean that I'm truly committed to it, and that's a part of my being. I'm doing it out of force as opposed to freely choosing to do something. So if I'm given a free will, a choice on where I want to live, where I want to shop, who I want to be engaged with or whatever, and I don't choose the same course that I was forced into, then the question is, was I really better off then, or am I worse off now? So the real solution to our collective understanding of ourselves as African people is that we have to choose. We now have the opportunity to choose to be African. We now have the opportunity to choose to be a part of a corporate functioning, to choose to be members of a community. But to make that choice, we have to also, and this goes back to what we discussed in terms of the formation of the Asante Nation, we have to choose to accept that I have to give up something in order to gain something collectively. As a person, I have to sacrifice something in order that we all might be a benefit together. And until we get to that point, then we will constantly be talking about how much money we collectively have in our communities. I think it's over $1 trillion or whatever it is now. And we still have all the economic problems that we have. Well, the fact of the matter is, because we've accepted the Western model of who we are as human beings, as opposed to understanding that we are divine beings and that we have to grow and cultivate this divinity. And once we begin to look at what constitutes the divinity, and we look at these laws and the law of Maat, as you said, then we understand that, yeah, I might be able to personally make gains, but is that really a benefit to the collective me? And if not, then I have to change. I will change my approach, and we will then benefit from our collective understanding that we are one people. It's not an ideal. It's a functional behavioral process that we have to put in place. Initiation is a process to enable us to see the flaws of our behaviors and to reprogram our spirit so that we can now function as a divine being.
You know, I am very, very, you know, thankful for this broadcast. And if I could just ask one more question, because I know that we've gone over the time by a couple of minutes, and that is this, because when people hear the word initiation, you know, because you got secret societies out here and all kinds of stuff. I think it scares a lot of people when they hear the word initiation. If they're not familiar with the word, they're like, what they going to do? You know, what they going to do to me? You know, it's like hazing or something, you know. So if you could just share, if you would, briefly, you know, just what initiation is. I mean, because it's not hazing, it's not, you know, nobody's going to, you know, hurt you. You know, you're actually going to help yourself. But I think that just that word initiation associated with an African, you know, community, you know, scares people.
Well, again, we're taught by others to always steer away from our own. You know, it's always cast in a negative light. Initiation, just think of it as on-the-job training. What's our job? Our job is to become a divine being. So initiation is the process where we learn how to make that our functional position, how we grow into that position.
Everybody, my special guest is Orwa Hehi Metera in Comet. Brother Orwa, again, I know we've gone over the time, but is there anything that we did not cover in terms of the administration, the administrative principles? I know because we, you know, the conversation went in different places. Was there anything that you wanted to point out that wasn't pointed out in the discussion that you wanted to bring out now?
No, I think that we've covered the foundational material well.
Okay. Wonderful. My special guest is Orwa Hehi Metera in Comet. Queen Renee, thank you so much for your call. I see you're still there. Other callers that are online, thank you so much. Brother Orwa, again, has been doing this series. He's been so gracious to be my special guest. We've been studying the Asante model, and we've looked at that model from the spiritual, economic, environmental, and social aspects. And tonight we looked at the administrative principles. Awesome, awesome interview. I can't wait to go back and listen to it again. So next Wednesday, again, if Orwa is available, he's a busy man, so I'm going to let you know if he'll be available next Wednesday, and we'll be continuing the discussion on the Asante model. So I want to thank everybody for your time. Any parting words, Brother Orwa? Brother Orwa?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Any final words?
Because my connection. No, I'm good. So, again, thank you for the opportunity. Thanks for your listeners for taking their time out of their days. I know they could be doing other things. I mean, I'm sure Donald Trump is saying something somewhere. We don't want to miss that. So, but we'll see you next week.
Okay. Thank you so much, Brother Orwa.
Okay.
Hetep. Everybody, again, that was Brother Orwa Hehi Metera in Comet, Paramount King of the Washington, D.C. region of the Oseraset Society. Thank you so much for tuning in. Again, to all of the new listeners, welcome, welcome, welcome to Health, Wealth, and Divine. To the people that have been listening all along, Queen Renee, thank you so much for you know, your ongoing support. And to everybody that has been with us from the outset, thank you, thank you, thank you. I really appreciate your time. As Brother Orwa said, you could be doing something else, but you've chosen to spend time with us. So spread the word, okay? Health, Wealth, and Divine, we've got all kinds of guests that are going to bring you information that's dealing with your health, dealing with your wealth, and dealing with your divinity. Coming up, I want you all to get ready, because in the very near future, I'm not going to tell you when just yet, but got a surprise for you. You remember the series that we did on Qigong with Shekhar Metta Uneta? Well, we're getting ready to do another series, okay, on Behutet. All right, so you definitely don't want to miss that. So I'll keep you posted on that and let you know when that's going to be, okay? So I want to make sure that you tune in tomorrow. On Thursday, my special guest is Dr. Ruby Lathan. That's right. Oh, she's got a powerful testimony. She was diagnosed with thyroid cancer. And being a doctor, being a researcher, she said, you know what, they're not taking my thyroid. Let me do some research. And after doing her research, she realized that adopting a plant-based diet was what the body needed to heal itself. So that's exactly what she did. She adopted a plant-based diet, and she cured herself of thyroid cancer. Okay, so, I mean, she's got a powerful testimony, so make sure you tune in tomorrow to hear that. And, again, I want to thank you so much for your time. So until the next time, which is going to be tomorrow, everybody, take care, peace and blessings. It's a boo.